on the Supreme Lord is here. We will try to complete them. Yes. The first four sections of this third of this 13th chapter. So the 13th chapter grows from six questions that Arjuna asks in the first verse. And the impetus for asking these questions is basically the desire to clarify the supreme position of bhakti and Bhagavan. So, the titles are more or less the same as what are there in your study guide. The only thing that I have done is, I have rephrased the title in terms of Arjuna's questions. So, that's the only difference, otherwise the titles are the same over here. So basically Arjuna asked this question, Prakritim Purusham Jaiva Kshetra Kshetra Devacha Etad Vedam Ichhami Jnanam Geyam Chakeshava. So Krishna starts by answering third and fourth question first. He answers what is Kshetra and Kshetrajna in verses 2 to 7. And after that, he answers what is Jnana in 5 verses 8 to 12. Then 13 to 19, he explains what is Jnana, what is that which is to be known. And then after that, Prakriti and Purusha, he answers. And then, after answering that, about Prakriti and Purusha, sometimes we have what is in management called as E-plus service. You know, you go beyond the expectations. So, Arjuna and Krishna analytically answers all these questions, and then he describes in 8 more verses how it all fits together into a worldview. So how what he had answered earlier, the six answers, how they all fit together into the coherent worldview of the Jnani. That is what is described. Okay. The link between the 12th and 13th chapter is Arjuna's desire to clarify the supreme position of bhakti. So because Arjuna already, as I mentioned in the previous class, 10th chapter, already made it clear that I have understood everything. But then he asked Vibhuti so that ordinary people could understand how to see Krishna in nature. Then he asked about universal form so that people would have a standard against which to judge others' claims of Godhood. Then he asked the 12th chapter the question so that people could know what is better in the impersonal, the path of impersonal realization or personal realization. And now, Krishna will ask further, Arjuna will ask further question, and Krishna will give a lot of answers about the impersonal process seen from the actual personal perspective. That means, that these terms, Kshetra, Kshetra, Jnana, Jnana, and Prakriti Purusha, they are generally used in Sankhya, quite a bit. So, how they are to be understood from the devotional perspective, which is the actual devotional perspective, that's what I described. So, there is no immediate impetus between the last verse of the 20th chapter, of the 12th chapter, and the question of Arjuna in the 13th chapter. Basically now, Arjuna is asking questions for general enlightenment. So let's start with the first ones. Arjuna Vacha Prakritim Purusham Chaiva Kshetra Kshetrajna Evacha Etad Veditum Ichhami Jnanam Jnanam Chakeshava. By the way, why is this not showing over here? I'll change the window here. Shri Bhagavan Vacha Idam Shariram Kaunteya Kshetram Ityabhidhiyate Etat Yovetitam Prahu Kshetrajna Iti Kalpitaha.
Arjuna says, O my dear Krishna, I know about everything, Purusha, the enjoyer, and the field, and the knower of the field, and of knowledge, and the object of knowledge.
So now, Kshetra means field, it also means sphere of influence. Okay, this is the area of which you have your influence, this is your field. Like somebody has his own field, it's not just in professionalization, somebody is good at management, somebody is good at computers, somebody is good at music. So we call that also the field. So basically, every soul, based on his past karma, is given a certain field. Soul is given a certain field. So, ant has a certain field, ant is walking along the road. Along the road, he thinks that, yeah, this road belongs to me. And the dog, sometimes, if you go at night, a dog is sitting on top of a car. He thinks that this car belongs to me. So, he thinks that is my kshetra. But basically, the kshetra is essentially the body. The kshetra is the body. So, this determines the body with a particular amount of influence on it. That is determined by our past karma. So, the body is the kshetra and the idam shariram kaunteya. Now, why is it called a kshetra? Now, the literal meaning of the kshetra is field. So, in the field, we sow seeds and accordingly we get crops. So, the soul sows the seeds of karma and accordingly get the crops. The cross is fructified as his next kshetra. So, the kshetra which he has, he is like now the owner of the tenant. He has to keep changing kshetra. So, the kind of cross he gets over here, by which he puts in the next kshetra. And etadhyo vetti. So, the kshetrajna is one who knows the kshetra. Now, the kshetrajna's knowledge is not complete knowledge of the kshetra. It is only knowledge enough for him to attempt to control it. He does not have comprehensive knowledge, so we don't know completely about the body. But we know something by which he can try to control and enjoy this body. And so Krishna says there is another kshetrajna. Kshetrajnam chapi mam vidhi sarva kshetreshu bharata kshetra kshetrajnayo jnanam tajnanam matammama. So, this verse is used by the impersonalists and they try to reinterpret this verse to mean Kshetrajnam chapi mam vidhi. So, what they say, the Kshetrajna is also me. He who knows the Kshetra, he who knows the body is the Kshetra and the Kshetrajna is also me. And that's why they try to say that the soul and the super soul are one. And I am situated in all living beings. So now the problem with this interpretation is that one kshetrajna is enlightening the other kshetrajna. And enlightenment would become meaningless if the two kshetrajnas are the same. Another problem with this will be also be in this chapter itself, in Purusha Prakriti Soi 30.2 verses there. And then it is described Bharta Bhukta Chimahindra Upadrishta Ananta Cha Bharta Bhukta Mahesha Paramatma Ti Chapya Ukto Dehesmin Purusha Para. Another Purusha is there. So there are repeated references to two Purushas, not just one Purusha. So in the 15th chapter also the same thing will come. But basically, from the overall point of view, the Kshetravya is not also me. I am also a Kshetravya. So there are three entities. There is the Kshetra, there is the local Kshetravya, and there is the universal Kshetravya. Local Kshetravya is the soul, universal Kshetravya is the super soul. But what my impersonal strategy is that the Kshetra is there, and the local Kshetravya is also the universal Kshetravya. But the duality of the two is very clearly seen from other passages in the scriptures as we will come to them. So if I say that, he is in the room, Shirup Chayanu is in the room. And Vaman Devro is also in the room. If I am referring to the same person, I will not use the word Chir. If Shirup Chayanu and Vaman Devro are the same. Shirup Chayanu in the room, and I will say his name is Vaman Devro. He is also named by another name, Vaman Devro. But then I am saying Shirup Chayanu is there, and he is also in the room. So then this also indicates that there is a second person over there. And that's why Kshetra, Kshetra Gyanam. So the problem comes because the categories are true, but two, but the individuals are three. Kshetra and Kshetrajna are two categories. But in the Kshetrajna there are two individuals. So total number of entities that are being discussed are three over here. Now because Kshetrajna is, both the Kshetrajna are of the same spiritual nature, so the mistake might happen that you may think both of them are one. And yatta jnanam matam mama. So this is a brief definition of knowledge that Krishna gives. To know the Kshetrajna and Kshetrajna, that is knowledge. One more elaborate definition Krishna will give at the end of 12th verse in this very chapter. So knowledge means to know Kshetra and Kshetrajna, as we say, to get an MSc degree. What is MSc? Matter, Spirit, Controller. To know these three, that is to have knowledge. So Kshetrajna. Kshetrajna is two, Spirit and Controller. Matter, Spirit and Controller. तत्क्षेत्रं यच्चया दृक्च यद्विकारी यतश्चयत् सचयो यत्प्रभावश्च तत्समासेन मे शृणु. I'll explain this to you and he'll explain this throughout the chapter. So how the body is constituted, that will be described in the 6th verse. What changes the body undergoes, that is 7 to 20. How, when and where the body is produced, that is 6, 21, 22. Who is the knower? That's 14 to 18 and 23. And the influence of the knower is 14 to 18. So Krishna is, in a sense, a nutshell, telling what he will tell in the full chapter. And you want to know this now? Should I move it? Yeah, because both topics are talked about over here. Krishna talks about both the knower and his influence together. बहुधा गीतं छन्दोभिर्विविधैः पृथक् ब्रह्मक्षेत्र ब्रह्मसूत्रपदैश्चैव हेतुमद्भिर्विनिश्चितैः. here, Krishna has earlier said, yatta jnanam matam ma. This is my opinion. Now, although Krishna is the Supreme Lord, his opinion is the reality. His opinion is the absolute truth. But still, Krishna show respect to the Vedic process of knowledge, is quoting sadhu and shastra. Krishidhir bahudha vitam. Many sages have talked about this earlier. And Brahma Sutra Parashyaya. So Brahma Sutra is the Vedanta Sutra. So Krishna is quoting sadhu and shastra to explain this. Hetu madhya vinashchitai. The Brahma Sutra characterized by very sharp logic. And now in this purport, so Prabhupada talks about Vyasadeva, Parashar Muni and others. So, the Taittiriya Upanishad, which is a branch of the Yajurveda, there is described Brahma Puchyam Pratishtha. Puchyam means five. So, Brahma manifests itself at five levels of consciousness. So, the Taittiriya Upanishad, second chapter, the Yajurveda. So, what are the five levels of consciousness? Basically, the purpose is to know Brahman. So there are two ways to know Brahman. One is called Vashti and the other is Samashti. So Vashti means from the individual to the universal. That means the soul turns and observes. Like Prabhupada would say sometimes, and by looking at one drop of water, you can know the nature of the ocean. So from the individual to the universal. So Prabhupada would say, by studying our own nature, we can understand God's nature. Because we are parts of God. So by looking into us, by looking at our consciousness, looking at our thinking, looking at our nature, we can understand God's nature. And Samashti means from universal to individual. You study nature, you go upwards, see the nature of nature. And then what is the actual reality beyond nature? So how it is that we look at ourselves, we study the body. And from the body we go inwards, we study the mind, then we come to the soul. And we understand the soul is spiritual. And from there we get introduced to spiritual reality. Or we look outwards and see the universe. And look at the universe and what is behind all the dynamism and changes in the universe? There's unchanging reality, there's Brahman. So within there is Atma, outside there is Brahman. And then what if both of them are spiritual? What is the relationship between them? So basically these are elaborate processes of knowledge. But Prabhupada here will take Vyashti process and elaborate. So Prabhupada talks about the five koshas. So, what are these five koshas? You may have heard these words. So, five koshas are Annamaya, Pranamaya, Jnanamaya, Vijnanamaya and Anandamaya. So now, what are these koshas exactly? They are both objective levels of God's energy and subjective levels of individual realization.
So, now, you don't understand anything. I'll give a simple example to explain this.
See, now suppose we have, all of us are bodies that live in India. So, we may be called as Indian citizens. Okay, so now Indian citizenship is objective reality. Isn't it? The Indian government may issue nationality certificate, official citizenship cards. So, Indian citizenship is the objective reality. By the same time, if a dog is living in India, it does not have the consciousness to understand that I am an Indian citizen. So, citizenship is the objective reality. It can be tangibly marked out. By the same time, there has to be some level of consciousness to observe that objective reality. So, a dog, an ant, an elephant, a bird, they are living in the same country, but they don't realize it. I am an Indian citizen. So that is the meaning of? So, citizenship is an objective reality. By the same time, to perceive that objective reality, there has to be subjective level of consciousness. A small baby who is born in India can't understand that I am an Indian citizen. He has to grow up. So, that means it's both objective as well as subjective. So, what has this got to do with Brahma? So, it's like whatever is existing is manifested and maintained by Krishna. So now, let's first understand these five as subjective levels of consciousness or realization. And then, Now basically, what does the word objective and subjective mean? Okay, that is itself confusing. Okay, because these are very common words when Prabhupada spoke sometimes. So object, see, in general, object means that it is out there, an object. So this is the object, the mic is the object. So now, I am a subject, I am observing this object. So now, like the classic example of that object-subject difference is that, you know, a beautiful woman is seen by a lusty young man, a sage and a lawyer in three different ways. So now the woman is the object to reality. But the subjective perceptions are different. The young man sees her as an object of enjoyment. The sage sees her as an object of illusion, display of the illusion. And the lion sees her as a lunchbox. So that means the objective reality is one, but the subjective perceptions can be many. So generally objective means that which exists as an object, independent of the observer. That is called an object. Objective. So you can simply remember the word objective or object. That is outside. That's objective. And subjective as is perceived by a subject, by a person. So this subject has got nothing to do with the different subjects that we have in school. English, physics, chemistry. Like there are different subjects. The subject means observed. So now this is the objective level of Krishna's energy, but it's also subjective level of consciousness. So first let's understand the subjective level of realization of consciousness. So annamaya means, let's say for example, there are amoeba. The amoeba doesn't know anything except eating. So if you remember the amoeba from your biology days, you don't know the matter. Let's think of a baby. A baby, small baby, whatever it gets, what does it do? Takes and puts it in mouth. As soon as fingers started going, it started sucking its finger. And when people go 4 or 5 years old, they still have the habit of sucking their finger. They don't give it up. But they not only eat food, actually their existence is defined by a unified awareness of everything as potential food. So reality is one. What is that one? Everything is potential food. So that's why actually sometimes small children, even when they pass their own stool, they pick it up and they try to eat it. That's their level of consciousness. So, actually, everything is one for them. Maya one. But everything is food. They are not even aware of their own existence, statistically. So, why is it they are not even aware of their existence? Because at the next level of consciousness, pranamaya, the whole reality is defined as environment where I have to maintain my prana. Earlier the environment is just potential food. Now also, so the higher levels include the lower levels, but there is something more in it. As a prana also anna is required, but there is some distinction. You know, if I eat this as anna, it will take away my prana. So I should not eat this. So pranamaya level is higher. So basically, annamaya means eating, sleeping, waiting, defending, only eating is this. And pranamaya means eating, sleeping, meeting, defending, all are there because one wants to maintain one's life to do all these things. So pranamaya means one starts differentiating, yes, I am a living being and I have to maintain my life. So pranamaya, that is a higher level of consciousness. Now beyond that, so these two are, so the soul is there in the body, but the soul's consciousness is so covered, the soul doesn't understand much about its higher spiritual reality. At the jnanamaya level, the soul starts understanding its own feelings. So, the consciousness has risen from the body to the mind. It's come to the mind. At the jnanamaya level. Thinking, feeling, willing. So one starts thinking about these things. You see, the animals, many of the scientists think, and to some extent this is true, that many of the lower animals don't have something called as moods. Now we may talk about it like that, but dolphins and other animals which are close to humans have their moods. But other animals, they don't generally manifest their moods. They just, whenever there's a food, you just pounce and eat it. When there's an opportunity for eating, we eat it. So they are more or less, their behavior is instinctive. But jnanamaya, what happens is, one starts thinking, these are my feelings. So basically, at this level, one is able to observe one's feelings. Initially, one identifies with one's feelings so strongly that one just acts on those feelings. What is the difference between another? For example, you know, a materialistic person, especially if a young person, if he starts feeling lusty, immediately he'll act on that. You know, he will try to find an object for enjoyment or artificially try to relieve himself. So what happens is, as soon as the feeling comes, he identifies that feeling and acts on that feeling. But when a person is more advanced, oh, I am feeling lusty. So this feeling is coming, I should control it. So basically one is able to identify that my feelings and I are different, these feelings are coming and I can check them. So basically initially one is identifying entirely with the body. Now one starts identifying with the mind and also understanding the mind and distancing oneself from the mind. This is where feelings come up. And then after Jnanamaya, there is Vijnanamaya. Not necessary. If he's acting immediately, he's pranamaya. But he starts identifying, oh, these are my feelings. These feelings are good, these feelings are not good. Then that is jnanamaya. And vijnanamaya means one starts realizing, oh, I am the soul. So vijnanamaya is a platform where spiritual life begins. So at the level of vijnanamaya, one has not yet understood that there is an absolute truth, there is God. Vijnanamaya, I am not the body, I am the soul. This is how spiritual realization begins. And Anandamaya means, one starts understanding that I am a part of God and I have to connect myself with God. And that is when I will become happy. So Krishna is... Okay, Vijnanamaya means, one understands one's own spiritual identity, but one has not yet understood about the Supreme Lord. And one has not understood the Supreme Lord's eternal Satchitananda nature. So, that's why it's Vijnanamaya. But when one realizes the Supreme Lord, then one comes to the Anandamaya level, where one understands that actually the Lord is Anandamaya, and if I can be with the Lord, then I will become Anandamaya. Like Lord Rama, that Rama means Ramati and Ramayati. One who enjoys and one who enjoys. Ramati, Ramayati, iti Ram. So like that, when one soul comes to the Anandamaya level, then he understands that he can be happy by connection with the Lord. And he understands the Lord, he understands the relationship with the Lord. So now all these five are progressive levels of realization. Okay, just a moment. They are progressive levels of realization. That means the soul at a particular time can be at one level of realization. So all of us were at Annamaya, Pranamaya earlier. Now we have come towards Jnanamaya and we are trying to move towards Vijnanamaya. And in the future advancement will come towards Anandamaya. Yes? Is it necessary in Jnanamaya that one has to be moral? No, not necessarily. Jnanamaya basically means one is able to observe one's feelings, one is able to understand one's feelings. If one has not got Shastric direction, then one will not be necessarily moral. So that's why Ramacharya classifies only those who follow Vedic culture as Jnanamaya. Others, he says, even if they are in human form and other than their culture, they are not Jnanamaya. They are still Pranamaya. So, Sambandha. When you are trying to bring me in the Upanishad and let me get a download together. too extreme. But generally, all these first four would be coming in the Sambandha Jnana. And Anandamaya would involve everything else. Avideya and Prayojan would all come under Anandamaya only. But that's just my understanding. Unless you can read something specifically, we cannot say for sure. But basically, because there is no knowledge of God, the Sambandha itself includes knowledge of God. It's knowledge of our identity and our relationship with God. So, and for At least in the first three levels, there is not much of that.
So therefore,
we can say that they will not include Sambandha. Sambandha itself will start at the fourth or fifth level. Okay. So, yeah. Yesterday morning we were talking about how jnana is at the level of intellect and realization is at the level of knowledge, is at the level of intellect and realization is at the level of the mind. So actually this jnanamaya is also called as manomaya many times. So manomaya, vijnanamaya, and the manomaya name comes at different places sometimes. But anyway, the point here is that when we are talking about the mind, here is not about curbing the mind or getting the realization of the treacherous nature of the mind. It's just basically living at the level of mind. Aesthetics. See, even aesthetics, they are there at the level of the mind. As aesthetics are, if a person just wants to enjoy sex, the person is not really concerned with the look of the other person at a gross animalistic level. But aesthetics come when a person is a little more evolved. So, of course, aesthetics are not only with respect to sex. They have many aspects of any other things also. The point is, aesthetics can be pursued only when one is at a higher level of consciousness. Aesthetic basically means an ability to be aware of beauty. That's aesthetic. No, just like, if a temple is very beautifully constructed. But some people come there and they don't even notice the temple. Just go in and they look in. So, aesthetic sense means one can see, this is very nicely constructed. Otherwise, you don't even notice. Aesthetic sense makes us aware. Just like some people have musical sense, and if somebody is playing the kartal wrong, they say, no, why is he playing it wrong? And sometimes the person who is playing it wrong does not have musical sense. So everybody is aware that he is wrong except he himself, and he is happy to claim it. So, just like a musical sense means an ability to understand what is the right music. So, now the correctness in music is subtle. So the correctness or appropriateness in beauty is also subtle. So, like when you are doing DT decoration, should you put the peacock feather straight, or should you put it a little tilted or not tilted or what? Now there is no mathematical or scientific formula to decide this. Then you have to see it, this looks good, this doesn't look good. That's aesthetics. Okay. Okay. So Jan, and so now suddenly I was expecting another question, you not yet something, no? I wonder why we're discussing these five levels here. Yeah, is there the purport? Or what is the correlation of the purport with the verses going on over here? Basically, this is called, the English word used for this is sheath. Kosha means sheath. Sheath is what? Like a sword kept in a sheath. It's the covering. So, the kshetra jnana, his jnana is covered by these different levels of sheaths. These different sheets. And as he advances, his jnana becomes more advanced. And then he will be able to realize the Atma, he will be able to realize the Paramatma. So, soon after this, Krishna will start the process of jnana, and then we will talk about jnana. So, as the process of jnana is applied, then the soul's consciousness moves upwards through the sheets. So that we can understand higher spiritual principles. First of all, his own mind, then the soul, and the super soul, the Supreme Lord. Okay. Now, what is the objective level of God? Subjectively understood now. That means, just like we have that verse, Yani Shah Sarva Bhutana. So, a devotee when sitting and chanting attentively, and absorb or not chanting, maybe not so few of us are absorbed. Maybe everybody is doing kirtan. And everybody is ecstatic in kirtan. Other people are just gawking. What are these people doing? Glare in a one day. I am so miserable. What are I doing? They have to be so happy. Then they should be miserable like me. So what is happening? Although both of them are physically at the same level, because of the raised consciousness, the devotee is experiencing a different reality. The devotee is experiencing something very different from what the ordinary person is experiencing. Although both are physically visual the same reality, and at a physical level, both are hearing the same sounds. Now, why is the effect different? You can say one person has bhakti, the other one has bhakti. Yeah, but what does bhakti do? Bhakti raises our consciousness, so that we can experience something which others cannot experience. So, this is an example of, you know, both are situated in the same physical place, but both are experiencing different things. Why? Because their consciousness is at different levels. So, there is an objective reality that, okay, kirtan is going on in the train. But the subjective consciousness is different. One person is ecstatic, another is bored, third is frustrated. So, why is that difference? Because subjective level of awareness. So now like that, now what is objective about this? See, it is Krishna's energy manifested at different levels to create these worldviews. So when the soul sees everything as potential food, how is the soul able to see everything as potential food? That the super soul is present in the heart. Super soul grants in that world. And because super soul grants in that world, that's how he is able to see everything that way. So, there is an objective level of reality also. That means, I will not go into this much more. I will just give one more example. That now we are sitting in this particular, fort. Hava Mahal. Okay. Yeah, this old castle. Now maybe a few hundred years ago, it was very beautifully constructed. So now, it's beautiful construction. Maybe there was very shapely windows and nice paint and very well art, a good artistic design over here. Now if at that time, there is a dog over here. And there is a prince over here. Now the dog is able to see this only as a structure, a building. Now it has its beautiful aspect. That is also objective reality. So the beautiful dog, at one level, it is an objective reality that is just a structure which protects from the sun and the rain and the... not the wind, sun and the rain. Okay? Maybe at that level it is protecting from the wind also. So, it is protecting from the sun and the rain. That's also objective reality. And the dog, if it is raining outside, will come to this place only because it sees this at that level. But, if a prince has built this, and prince is also in the same structure, but he's perceiving it differently. You see, oh, this is aesthetically done. It's not so well done. It's better to have done that. So, although the structure is the same, there are higher aspects to it which can be perceived at a higher level of consciousness. Let me see, is it objective reality? Is it just a shelter? Or is it just a shelter? Or is it also a aesthetically, beautifully constructed palace? It is both. But depending on individual consciousness, one is able to perceive it. No, but there is objective. There are objective features which make it aesthetic, or which don't make it aesthetic. There is also objective reality. If those features are not there, somebody could not just imagine that this is beautiful, this is aesthetically done. So there are added features to reality which can be perceived when a person is at a particular level of consciousness. If a person is not at that level of consciousness, they cannot perceive it. Or another example, say. And now there are two devotees, both of them are shaven-headed, both of them are wearing saffron, and, you know, at an external level, both of them are similar. But one may be a neophyte, one may be an advanced devotee. Some article in the newspaper, which said that these two twins look as alike as two Hare Krishna monks. So why? Because
you know, they don't know anything about the devotee's personality. They just see the external, they see shaven head and they see a shikha and they see a particular kind of dress. Everybody has the same, everybody looks same. So, and the name is also Das for everyone. In fact,
Now, on the other hand, if there is some advanced devotee who comes there, you know, he sees both the devotees, he says, this devotee's consciousness needs a lot of work, but this devotee's consciousness is fine. Now, this is the individual observation, so that you can call it subjective. But it is based on some objective differences also. This devotee may be behaving in a very crude way, and he may be talking a little inappropriately. The more advanced devotee is very refined, and talks very softly and soberly. So, yes, there is, you require a subjective level of consciousness to understand this difference. But the difference is also objectively there. That's why, that's the meaning of subjective and objective. And if you don't understand it, understanding this is not the objective of this class.
It is only a part of this class and we can go ahead. What? The one line that you can remember is that these five levels of these five koshas are objective levels of God energy and objective levels of individual energy. Sorry? I cannot take the full purpose. I took that which is most important and relevant and interesting.
Basically, Prabhupada quotes from that Vedanta Sutra mainly for this point that this Kshetra and Kshetrajna is talked also about over there. And there also the difference between the two kinds of Kshetrajna is mentioned. Prabhupada says Parashalmini also talks about it. Vyasa Vedanta Sutra, Parashalmini also talked about it. And Rishibhir Bhauda Aritam, he quotes Parashalmini for that. So now, this is about the koshas. So now here, Krishna will conclude the description of Kshetrajna for this point. And then he will start the description of the Kshetra. So that is the next verse.
महाभूतानि अहंकारो बुद्धिरव्यक्तमेव च इन्द्रियाणि दशैकं च पञ्चचेन्द्रियगोचरः इच्छावेशसुखं दुःखं संघातश्चेतनाधृतिः एतत् क्षेत्रं समासेन सविकारमुदारतम्.
Fourth stanza describes the 24 elements of material creation. Mahabhutani is these pancha mahabhuta. Ahankara is 6. Buddhir and Abhyakta, they are the 8. Abhyakta is the pradhana. Then Indriyana is the Shaikam. The Shaikam includes 11 is also including the mind. So how much does it become? 19. And pancha chendriya gocharaha, that is the sense objects. So it becomes 24. Now Krishna is talking about the kshetra. Earlier I already mentioned this two Kshetrajna, so total will become 26. Now after this, Krishna says, Ichha Dvesh Sukha Dukkha. And then Chetana and Dhruti, Sanghati in summary, all these are Savikara Udharatam. They are the transformation of the Kshetra. Now is consciousness the transformation of matter? Prabhupada's whole book, Life from Love, I think, consciousness is not a product of matter. And it seems the vikara mudharutam. Kshetra is the vikara, the transformation of kshetra. Now is that possible? No, but subtle matter also doesn't solve the problem. Actually, here Chetana refers to conscious. Here Krishna is not saying that Chaitanya is produced by Kshetra. It is the vikar, it is a transformation. So basically, Vallabhadra Bhushan in his Govinda Bhashya, while commenting on the Vedanta Sutra, describes the difference between Chitta and Chitta. Chitta and Chitta. Satchitananda is Chitta. And Chitta. So what is the difference between Chitta and Chitta? So Chitta is the consciousness of the soul. And Chitta is the consciousness of the soul as is manifested through the body. So what is the difference between the two? The consciousness of the soul and the consciousness of the soul manifested through the body. So earlier we had discussed the example of the soul in the body is like a person watching a movie. When a person is watching a movie, his consciousness is riveted onto the movie screen, and through the movie screen onto, maybe if it's a mountainous area where some fight is going on, his consciousness has gone to that mountain. If it's a field where a cricket match is going on, his consciousness has gone to the cricket match. So now, he has his own consciousness by which he can see the world all around him also. But his consciousness is rooted through the TV into the arena, what program is being broadcast on it. So like that, the soul has its own self-consciousness. Soul has its own self-consciousness. But when the soul identifies with the body, the soul's consciousness gets rooted through the body. So, Chit means Sat Chit Ananda. That Chit of the soul, the original consciousness of the soul, is when it is expressed through the body, it is called as Chitta. So, all that we can know is Chitta. We can never know the Chit. Now, if I am looking at you, well, how are you looking at me? With your Chitta. And I am looking at you through the Chitta. The Chit is unknowable for us. But the Chitta is what is knowable to us. So, when he says, now the Chitta gets affected by the body. How does the Chitta get affected by the body? Prabhupada will explain later, and Bhagavad Gita purports of later chapters, how when the soul is in the body of a hog, he is attracted to stool. The soul is in the body of a human being, he is attracted to stool. So why? The soul is the same basically, of the same nature. The soul has the same Chitta. But the Chitta is rooted through the Chitta, is through the body, it becomes Chitta. And then it is under the spell of that particular body. It acts accordingly. So the dog, the same soul will bark. As a lion, the same soul will roar. As a parrot, the same soul will sing. So the consciousness is the same, but the consciousness is affected by the body. And Chaitanya, and along with this, he's telling also that when the soul's consciousness is rooted through the body, Ichha Dvesha Sukha Dukkha. Now, what is Ichha and what is Dvesha? For every individual, somebody might like a palak sachi. Ichha. Somebody else, what about Dvesha? So, the soul is the same, but what is different is the body is different. And because the body is different, so when the soul is born in South India, it is heavily is very good. Because the soul is rooted through a Chitta is rooted to a South Indian boy. The soul is born in North India, he thinks paratha is very good. The soul is born in Bengal, he thinks that sukta is sukta, rice is very good. That's sukta is very good. So basically this is Chitta. So Ichha and Dvesha are determined by the consciousness that is rooted through the body. And then accordingly with Ichha and Dvesha we have Sukha and Dukkha. And not only Sukha and Dukkha, there is Dhruti. Dhruti means convictions. This is good, this is bad. They are also determined by the body. So, to a large extent, the soul's nature gets covered by the body. And what we get to know is only that soul's consciousness as expressed through the body. So that's why, at our level, at the conditioned soul's level, the emotions that are experienced are the transformations of the Kshetra. They are not the soul's original emotions. The emotions, Ichha, Dvesha, Sukha, Dukkha, the three convictions, they are all the transformations of the Chitta. Yes? Is the transformation of Chitta mind? Yeah, it's the mind, but not just the mind. The false ego is also there. The antakarana, the subtle sense is also there. And the atheism is also there. It's not as the mind feels in particular. It lives also decides on that, you know. So the whole subtle body is made in a particular way. Sorry? Is the chitta referred to as psyche? Possibly. The word psyche has basically the meaning that the way a person thinks, his psyche is like that. So you could roughly correlate it like that. Correlate it, yeah, roughly. But yeah, there's no English equivalent. Roughly is an equivalent to psyche. Yeah. Okay, yeah, what about the life symptoms? That is, life symptoms provide answer to chetna. The aggregate means that Sanghat is Chetana Dhruti. So Baldev Vidyabhushan puts translate Sanghat as the body and Chetana Dhruti as one element, conscious determination. So basically Sanghat is the aggregate of the material element. So you see, every particular body, every particular soul has a body that is shaped and constructed in a particular way. And the transformations of the body take place in different ways for different souls. So it's within the species also different souls have different kinds of bodies. And across the species also different souls have different bodies. So these different species of the body are basically transformations of kshetra. So Sanghat basically refers to aggregate material elements which constitute the kshetra for the body, kshetra for the soul, that is basically the body. Chitta Paramajana basically means chitta is equivalent. Is subconscious mind the chitta? Possibly, because science itself talks about subconscious mind in a very ambiguous way. Because science is not even aware of mind, it's not even aware of consciousness. So it's not aware of conscious mind. What to speak of subconscious mind? So, but what certain self-help teachers, they talk of subconscious mind as a latent reservoir of energy, by programming which you can do wonderful things. Now, from our point of view, subconscious mind is basically the smriti, for the very common one, the memory that are stored, but they are not manifested in the consciousness. So they may not be stored in the brain, they may be stored in the mind also. That you can call it subconscious mind. So subconscious mind, that if you are referring to that like that, mind is an element of material creation, whereas chitta is a property of consciousness. Now sometimes chitta is equated with the mind, mat chitta mat gata prana. So this chitta is general voice, but it's not a technical usage of the word chitta. When you see the Govinda Bhashyam, you know, commentary on that, it's a technical book. So there, chitta is used in a specific sense. Chitta is used there in the sense that it is the consciousness of the soul manifested through the body. But in general, for us, it can be equated with the mind in a non-technical sense. Yes, we have to purify our mind. But we have to fix the consciousness of the chitta on Krishna. That means the consciousness that is as rooted through the body. So let's move it. So now he says, these are etat chetram samasena sadhikara udharitam. Now Prabhupada gives a brief analysis of these. And then, and Prabhupada is described very briefly here. In one who desires to know the 24 elements in detail along with their interactions, you study the philosophy in more detail. In Bhagavad Gita, only somebody only is given. So where do you study the philosophy? Third canto. It is the second biggest canto of the Bhagavatam, after the 10th canto. It's huge. For those who want to study Sankhya, it's very interesting for those who are interested. It's very complicated for those who are not interested. So now, after this one, now here the description of the kshetra ends. So Krishna described the Kshetrajna briefly in the Kshetra Rukti. Now, afterwards he started eating it. So, although Arjuna has asked 6 questions in a particular sequence, Krishna answers them in a different sequence. It's like, so, his first question is about Purusha and Prakriti. And then about Jnana and Gaya. So Krishna answers first the 3rd and 4th, then 5th and 6th, then he comes to 1st and 2nd. Now we will see when we study the last section, Jnana section, that this way it's easier to get a holistic understanding. Sometimes if people ask too many questions at one time, we can tell you one question at a time. Or you can tell, okay, whichever question can be answered, you have to start with the basic and move towards the more advanced. So basically Krishna is not just answering Arjuna's questions, Krishna is giving Arjuna and through Arjuna to all of us a systematic worldview to understand. That's why he answers questions in a particular sequence. So Prabhupada's teaching will always start with, first, you're not the body, you're the soul. You start starting with that, okay, now you have understood there is a body, there is a soul. Now how do you realize this difference? So now jnana in the Vedic culture is never just information. It is always transformation. So jnana means knowledge which transforms. It is not knowledge that just informs. So that's what Prabhupada explains in the first word, that this is not just knowledge, it is the process of knowledge.
अमानित्वम् अदम्भित्वम् अहिंसा शान्तिरार्जवम् आचार्योपासनम् शौचम् धैर्यमात्मविनिग्रहः इन्द्रियार्थेषु वैराग्यम् अनहंकारैव च जन्ममृत्युजराव्याधि दुःखदोषान् दर्शनम् असक्ते अनभिष्वङ्गः पुत्रजायग्रहादिषु नित्यचित्तत्वम् इष्टाभिष्टोपपत्तिषु मयिषानन्ययोगेन भक्तिरभ्रचारिणी विविक्तदेशसेवित्वम् अरतिर्जनसंसदि आध्यात्मज्ञाननित्यत्वम् तत्त्वज्ञानार्थदर्शनम् एतज्ज्ञानमिति श्रोक्तम् अज्ञानम् विदतो अन्यथा.
We discussed these 20 elements, if you remember, in Arishopisha class. When Krishna is talking about Vidya, and Vishnu is talking about Vidya and Avidya, verses 9 to 11. So, in the first word of verse 10, Prabhupada lists these elements and elaborately explains them. So, we will not go over all of them now, but just a few points here. So, Srila Prabhupada explains that among these, the most important element is Maichananya Yogena Bhakti Ravya Vichara. So basically, first of all there is a problem and then there is a solution. And then there is approach to the solution. Or the difference is, first of all there is a problem. Problem is, I am sick, I am pain. The solution is, okay, take this medicine. But to take this medicine, okay, to take the medicine I need some money. So then I have to go to my bank, I have to withdraw the money, then I have to go to the shopkeeper, I have to get the medicine and take the medicine. So there is problem, there is solution, there is approach to solution. So first, knowledge begins with by identifying the correct problem. The correct problem is Janma Mrityu Jara Vyadhi Dukkha Dosha and Darshanam. So without identifying this problem of material existence, one cannot move forward towards the right solution. So the Vedic culture takes everything to a very foundational level. You know, in the Christian theology, there is what is called the problem of evil. Why does God let innocent children die? Why does God let innocent people in thousands die in tsunamis and earthquakes? They call it, how can a good God allow such evil to happen in this world? So there is a serious problem in Western philosophy, theology. It's called like the problem of evil. So the Vedic culture takes it to a much foundational level. It says, it's not that as young children die or thousands of people die in earthquakes, death itself is a problem. Death itself is a problem. That's how Prabhupada translates this as the universal, what is it? Perception of the evil of birth, death, old age. Evil. So this itself is evil. It is not that a particular death when a child dies when he is small, it's evil. Even when he is old, he is dying, that is evil. Because nobody wants to die. So that is the identification of the problem. And the solution is devotional service. And everything else is the approach to devotional service. All the other qualities are developed so that you can take shelter of Krishna more. So that these qualities are similar in some ways to the qualities discussed in chapter 12. But in chapter 12, qualities are primarily the qualities of a jnani, of a bhakta. And here the qualities are of a jnani. That's why here the qualities include something like vivikta desha sevitvam arathir janasamsuri. So live in a secluded place. Don't mix with other people. Now, we also apply it. We don't mix with materialistic people, but we do mix with devotees. So, in that sense, the Janmukti Jaragadhi is the problem. My challenge is Yogena, Bhaktira Uchyarani is the solution. Everything else is an approach to the solution. So, it's an important purport and very systematic purport. So, I'll just outline what is there in the purport. So we will not go over the purport. Here Prabhupada writes, so Prabhupada starts with humility. First one, it is the structure. Humility means that one should not be anxious to have the satisfaction of being honored by others. Very classic definition. One should not be, it is not that one should not be honored by others, it is not that one should not be satisfied by honor by others. One should not be anxious to have the satisfaction of being honored by others. In Prabhupada said non-violence, tolerance, almost like every paragraph is describing one quality. Steadiness, then false ego, then Janmukti Jaragadhi. And Prabhupada makes the next statement over here. Last sentence of this purport, of that paragraph of Janmukti Jaragadhi. Unless we have a pessimistic view of this material life, considering the distresses of birth, old, death, old age, and disease, there is no impetus for our making advancement in spiritual life. No impetus. So Prabhupada was asking, what is the qualification for going back to the spiritual world? Prabhupada answered differently at different times. But one time he answered, be convinced that this world is a place of misery and want to get out. So then Prabhupada here elaborately talks about attachment to family. He talks about how the deity worship, by chanting, by studying Srimad Bhagavatam, one can make one's heart and spiritual. And now in this list, Adhyatma Jnana Triktam Tapuyanatma Darshan, the last two quality, are there especially for Jnanis. And Prabhupada explains, here last paragraph, beginning from practicing humility up to the point of realizing Supreme Truth, it is like a staircase. One moves gradually upwards. A little earlier Prabhupada also, so last sentence, that is the essence of knowledge. Due to our rebellion against the Supreme Lord, one becomes subordinate to material nature. One must know and be convinced of this truth. One must know and be convinced of this truth. Due to our rebellion against nature, against God, we have committed to material nature. So, this, I didn't go over the full purport, another place in the same book of Prabhupada is, some people mistake this to be the transformation of the Kshetra, but it is not a transformation of the Kshetra, since the means to get out of the Kshetra. So now, the last line of this verse is Abhyanam yat tanyatha. Beyond this, everything else is ignorance. So what does this mean? Chakravarti Pada describes that any behavior that is contrary to the behavior produced by these qualities is ignorance. That means humility is knowledge and pride is ignorance. So tolerance is knowledge. Behavior opposite of tolerance is ignorance. Like that. So, knowledge, interesting, Krishna classifies in terms of not information, but in terms of qualities. So now, let's proceed. Yes. good question. These don't look to be items of knowledge. So, what do you mean by the process of knowledge? In the Vedic culture, it is understood that we don't see the world as it is, we see the world as we are. We don't see the world as it is, we see the world as we are. So, that means, you know, if a materialistic person, if a young person is very rusty, he comes to an international center like Mayapur, then he will not see that as a spiritual place. He will say, oh, there are so many young foreign ladies over here. He will see it as he is. He will see this so sensual enjoyment over here. So, you know, one time in one of our temples, it started, the Matanis were agitating, you know, why only Prabhuji should dance? He will also dance in the temples. And they started dancing. What happened? The number of men coming to the temple increased dramatically. And the men were not coming to see the deity. They just coming to have a free dance show being seen. So, you know, we don't see the world as it is. Those people are coming, they are not seeing the Matanis, they are Vaishnavis. They are seeing them as objects of enjoyment. So, of course, that's a different issue. My point is whether women should dance or not in temples. That's a different issue. We are not going to go into that. But the point which we are discussing is we don't see the world as it is. We see the world as we are. So, therefore, if you want to change our worldview, the Vedic culture says change your own nature, change your own consciousness. So, that's why later on in the 14th chapter, Krishna will describe Sattvat Sanjayate Jnanam. Jnana does not come with the study, it comes with a Sattvaguna lifestyle. Sattvaguna basically. So, by developing these qualities, knowledge develops. By developing these qualities, knowledge will awaken in our hearts. And that's why this is called a process of knowledge. So, to some extent, if these qualities are there, we can say the person has knowledge. And to the extent we are developing these qualities, we are developing knowledge. Okay. So now the section of knowledge is completed. Now Krishna, after discussing jnana, will start jnana. So this is a little tricky section of this chapter, and we will keep it as simple as possible.
Keyam yattatra vakshami jnatva amritam ashyute anati matparam brahma satannasa duchyate.
So this Gaya is very difficult to understand. That's why Krishna starts with a promise. If you understand this Gaya, what will happen? Amrita mashnate. You will attain nectar. So generally we think nectar in terms of Krishna's pastimes. Here nectar in terms of analyzing Upanishadic statements. Krishna says that is also nectar. You will attain nectar. And now in this some of these verses, this Gaya, this verse which is referring to Paramatma or Atma, there is some difference between the Acharya. So we will stick to Prabhupada, or Prabhupada says, and we will explain that. Chakravarti Pad says that this verse, Anadi Natparam Brahma, Satyanasatuchyate refers to Brahman. Now Prabhupada explained that this refers to Jivatma. Matparam means dependent on me. So this is Jivatma. Nasattanasatuchyate. That means he is beyond this cause and effect of this world. The Jivatma is transcendental. So this verse 13 will describe the Jivatma and 14 to 18 describes the Paramatma. So the main information that is given about Jivatma is Matparam. He is subordinate to me. And now after describing this, Prabhupada gives some intricate references from the Upanishads in this purpose. We don't have the time to study them, but we will just focus on the principles which we learn from here. Now, after this was the verse which caused perplexity to Advaita Acharya. And that perplexity was glorified by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sarvata Panipadam Tat Sarvato Shishiromukham Sarvata Shruti Malloke Sarvama Vritya Tishthati.
Everywhere I have the leg, the eyes, the ears and faces, we have ears everywhere. In this place, supposed to exist, pervading everything.
So Prabhupada is compassionate and telling us that this is a reference to Super Soul. There is no Paramatma over here in this world, anything like that. that sarvata, that tat, whatever the tattvamasi, that tat word is there. That tat pervades everywhere, pervades everywhere and exists everywhere. So it's very enigmatic words. But the super soul, because it's present in every atom, it's present in every heart, and super soul is conscious. The soul has a form. So therefore, everywhere has hands and legs. That's what it's called. The Prabhupada in one purport in the Bhagavatam quotes the same words, and he says that if somebody wants to interpret this to refer to the Jivatma, you can do that also. How is that? He says in this world, in this universe, at various places, all are the souls who are the servants of the Supreme Lord. And the souls, whether by their choice or by force, are ultimately acting according to Krishna's direction, under Yoga Maya or Mahamaya. So whatever whoever is doing is ultimately being done by the sanction of Krishna. Therefore, everywhere are his hands and legs. So if somebody slaps me, you should see, not blame this person, is sanctioned by Krishna. It is Krishna, this person is an instrument of my karma. So you know that past time. Once Prabhupada was giving a class, suddenly some young of the person got up, I had blasphemed him, shouting this, Prabhupada was calm here. Prabhupada didn't say anything. And the dude is waiting, but Prabhupada will tell us and they will make that person straight. But Prabhupada did not say anything. And then after the whole program got, that person walked out in a half. Prabhupada continued the lecture. And then the dude went and asked Prabhupada, why did you speak like that? So Prabhupada gave a simple but profound reply. He said, I don't know. Krishna allowed it, so I must accept it. Yeah, amazing. I don't know. You know, when different people behave in different ways, you don't know why they behave. But if they're behaving like that, Krishna allowed it. So I must accept it. So in this way, sarvata panipadanta. If you see that it is Krishna by whose sanction everything is happening, then this verse can be used to interpret. We interpret it to be the soul also. It's not the individual souls, but different souls who have their hands and legs at different places. Sarvendriyaguna bhasam, sarvendriya vivarjitam, asaktam sarva vrukchaiva, nirgunam guna bhuktricha.
Super soul is the original source of all sense, yet he lives without sense. He is unattached, although he is the maintainer of all living beings. He transcends the modes of nature, at the same time he is master of all modes.
Now, this theme is elaborated again in Gajendra's prayers to the Lord. So, Sarvendriya Guna Abhasam, the source. So, Abhas also means you have Nam Abhas. Abhas is one, the initial illumination that is starting. So, he says, you are the source of the senses, you are the illumination of the senses. That means the senses have the ability to see because Krishna gives them the ability to see. So, and but at the same time, he does not have any senses. Vivarjitam. So how does he not have, he is the source of our senses, but he himself does not have senses. How does he not have senses? No material senses. He has only spiritual senses. So this is all apparently contradictory. No, he is the source of all senses, or he is the illumination of all senses, but he himself does not have any senses. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he is talking with Sarva Bhattacharya and Prakashan Saraswati, uses the same argument, both ways, the strong argument it is. The Upanishads say that how did the creation start? Saha Aishitaha. That absolute truth glanced. Now he says that according to Mayavadis, all senses and all sense objects are a product of illusion. So, if creation began with a glance, whose glance was it? If the eyes that glance were created as a product of illusion, then whose eyes were there before the creation started? And whose eyes started the creation? Are this point clear? Sa aikshitaha. Create, this is the moment of creation. And this moment of creation started because somebody glanced. But according to Mayavadis, all the eyes that can glance anywhere are created after the creation. They are product of Maya. So whose glance started the creation? Therefore he says, there are transcendental senses which are not created. Those transcendental senses belong to the Supreme Lord. And we also have this similar theme in the famous verse of the Shurashadu Upanishad. Apani Pado Javano Grihata Pashyatya Chakshu Sashno Chakarana. Apani Pado, that absolute, there is no hands and legs, But whenever we offer him food, he immediately comes in and receives it. He has no ears, but he can hear. So, any of you remembers about Arthapatti? I discussed in Ishavishad, yes? Yeah, he's eating at night. So that's called postulation. A third statement is not explicitly given, but if you have to hold both statements to be true, then the third statement has to be postulated, by which both can be held to be true. So he has no senses, at the same time he is also all senses. That means he has spiritual senses. Asaktam sarva brukchaiva. Asaktam, he is not attached to anyone, but at the same time he is maintaining everything. How is that possible? And then you are maintaining in struggle, and we maintain somebody because we are attached to that person. So he is asaktam, sarvabhuk, as Vishnu, in Chakravarti Valisana, as Vishnu is maintaining everyone. But as Krishna is performing pastime in the future world, he is asaktam. He is not bothered about anyone. Nirgunam guna bhoktrucha. He says nirgunam refers to, again, so basically, the negative attributes he is referring to Paramatma, Vishnu is Paramatma here, and the positive attributes he is referring to Bhagavan. So nirgunam means he has no material qualities. Guna bhoktrucha means he has six Aishwaryas. The six of the gunas by which he enjoys. Guna bhoktrucha. Prabhupada quotes the Panipada in the purport. Now all these sections are just paradoxical verses. Bahirantascha bhutanam acharam charam evacha sukshamatva tadavigyayam durastham chanti kechatat. Which is the Ishopishad verse, is a similar thing?
Yeah, excellent. So you are seeing how similar this section is to Upanishads?
Whereas Tadduve, Tadvandike, Tadantarasa Sarvasa, Tadusarvasyasya Bhayata. So both things are talked about here. Very interesting. Krishna started with talking about Gyayam Yatta Pravakshami. And he is saying the Gyaya is Avijyaya. That is to be known is unknowable itself. The Gyaya is Avijyaya. So what does it mean? It is Avijyaya. By our material tarka. When we hear submissary from scripture, devotion, then we can understand. That is not told over here, but a couple of verses later he will say, Madhakta etad vijnaya. Who will understand this? My devotee alone can understand it. So at this stage it is avijnaya. Because by our material logic we cannot figure it out. Yes? And? Presumption. Can Arthapatti be called as presumption? The Sanskrit words can be translated differently into English. Now, presumption generally means what we assume in advance. So, assumption and presumption. So, assumption means what we assume. Presume means in the beginning only we are assuming it is true. That's called presumption. So, we don't assume it like that to be true. Arthapatti means it's a postulation. Okay, this and this are there. How do we reconcile it? So, I'll postulate a third thing. So, generally, presumption comes before the study. Like the atheists presume that there is no God and they look at nature and they try to see how could this design have come without any denial. So, presumption is what comes before the observation of the study. Postulation is what comes after the particular study, after the study. So, now, how do we understand this? Bahirantascha bhutanam is outside, is inside. He is inside everyone as the super soul, he is outside everyone as the Mahavishnu. Acharam charameva cha. He moves, he does not move. Sukshmatva tadavigyam. He is very subtle. And there is this ongoing controversy in ISKCON. There is no resolution. Is the super soul in the heart of the body or in the heart of the soul? So, the current opinion of the Shastric Advisory Committee is that super soul is in both places. The postulation. So, the super soul in the heart is the soul, and the super soul in the heart is the soul also. Because Prabhupada said both things, so we accept both to be true. Durastham cha antiketa. He's far away and he's close also. How is he far away? As Bhagavan is far away, Paramatma is very close. For the devotee, he is very close. For the non-devotee, he is very far. And then he describes for the characteristics of the Paramatma. Naturally, that is the Paramatma is understood only in the 18th verse. Till now, it is just that, that, that. What is that? All contradictory thing attributes are described. Avibhaktam, yeah? Oh, they say you don't have to interpret. It's clear, Brahman. It's just Brahman. Yeah, it's figurative. It's figurative. Everywhere are the hands and legs. Yeah, basically that means everywhere is Brahman. Sarvam avrutta tishtati. So this is the favorite section, the Bhagavad Gita. But you know, Krishna poisons their fun over here also. You know, he brings bhakti bhakti everywhere. So, which they don't like so much.
Avibhaktam ca bhuteshu, vibhaktam iva ca sthitam, bhuta bhartra ca tadyeyam, krishnu praha vishnu ca.
So, avibhaktam and vibhaktam. Although it's just one place, he appears divided. How is that? Because the sun is over in the sky, but if you have 100 pots on the ground, in all the 100 pots, appears the sun is separated. So, like that, super soul is one, but he manifested in the hearts of all beings. And bhuta bhartru chadajyayam. Know him to be the maintainer of all living beings. And as he's not only the maintainer, Gasishnu, he's also the destroyer. And he's also Prabhavishnu. So, Prabhavishnu means what? Vishnu is generally the maintainer. Now, Prabhava, Pravaya Sthana. Prabhava is creator. So, Prabhavishnu means that Vishnu who creates, the creator. So, he's saying he's the creator, he's the maintainer, he's the destroyer. So, he's beyond. There are devatas who do all this, but he's beyond them. He's the principle by which they're doing all these things. Yes? Yeah, it's a good question. When we say that the sun is not actually present in the pots, do you want some more philosophy? No, not this part, not necessarily. This is important also. Let me see. 14, 15, 16, 17, 18. No, we don't have any other place for this philosophy. So, you asked for it. This is. I took the Ishopishad here for all of you, then I took the similar thing for the Kolkata devotees, so I added a few things. So, Jiva Goswami Sandarbha has a very nice explanation of this. How will I find this? Okay, anyway, Mahamandir, last time I asked about this. This is. Here, this describes which Upanishad belongs to which Veda. So, the Rig Veda has all these Upanishads in it. Kaushitaki Upanishad, Aitiraya Upanishad. Okay. You don't have time to see all this, but I can give you the three afterwards. So there you will see. The Yajur Veda, we have the... So Yajur Veda has two parts, the white part and the black part. Shukla and Krishna. So, Shukla Yajurveda, Isha Upanishad is one of them. Next one is the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. So this is how the Upanishads are classified in different categories. You can repeat the question. You can repeat the question. Krishna, where is it gone? Huh. Okay. So here, this is what I will discuss. This is from the primary from the Bhagavad Sandarbha of Jiva Goswami. He gives different analogies to explain Krishna and his relationship. So Bhagavan and his Shakti. What is the relationship? So first analogy that he uses is fire and light. Now what does the fire and so every analogy, as we know, conveys a particular message, a particular point. And if you get more analogy, conveys a complete reality. So now the fire and light analogy conveys how fire is at one place but light spreads everywhere. Ekadesha sitasyarana yosna vitsaraniyata. So like that, the absolute is one place but the energy spreads everywhere. Now but this does not talk about the gradations of the energies. This doesn't talk about the gradation of the energies. So now for that, of course, the gradation of the energy, Jesus gives an example of that Ishvara has three Shaktis, the Bahiranga, Antaranga and Tatashtra. Antaranga he calls it Sarupa Shakti. So, the Supreme Lord, not Ishvara, Bhagwan, this is the word. The Bhagwan is Krishna, so he is like the sun god. And the sun god has a glaring effulgence right around him. That is the Antaranga Shakti, that is very close to him. That is manifest on that glazing effulgence, is manifested only on the sun planet, any other on the sun planet. And that the Antaranga Shakti is manifested in the spiritual world. Now the rays move far outwards. The rays move outwards and like that the souls emanate from the Supreme Lord and they are in the different universes everywhere. The souls, the Tatastha Shakti, are the rays of the sun. And the sun's reflection in bodies of water or on shining surfaces on the earth, that he feels the Bahiranga Shakti. Now, for example, if I throw a stone in the reflection, what happens when I throw in the stone in the reflection? The reflection apparently needs to break, gets distorted. Nothing has happened to the sun. So like that, this material energy can apparently change, but there is no change in the Supreme Lord. So this is the example he used for explaining how there are gradations within the energy of Ishvara. Now he talks about what is Achintya Bhairavesh? Now fire burns, if I say. Now, you cannot talk about fire without its burning power. But still, fire and burning are two different things. If they were two exactly the same, then I could just say fire. If I had to warn the child, don't go there, fire burns. I'll just say fire. But that's only the fire burns, I have to tell you. So in one sense, fire is like the noun, burns is like the verb. Fire is the object and the burns is like the action. So fire is the energy, burns is its energetic. Fire is energetic and burning is energy, it's action. So this just says fire is different from the power of burning. So like that, Bhagwan and Shakti are same and different. There are two more analogies, but I'm not going to them right now. Speaking to your point. So his question was that the Paramatma, I give the example that the sun when is reflected in many pots, like that the super soul is reflected in the hearts of many living beings. So actually, the sun is not actually present here, whereas the super soul is actually present in the heart. So now, every analogy is for a particular purpose. So, the difference, the analogy of these pots is given to illustrate this point that actually there is no difference within the super souls. That the super soul is only one. And one super soul is manifested in many places. So the point here is not whether the manifestation is a reflection or reality. The point is that there are many manifestations that are of the same super soul. Many manifestations are of the same super soul. Just like if we enter into a hall which is a hall of mirrors, 20-35 mirrors. The same person is seen in those 25 mirrors. The point is that it's the same person. Although what is reflected may not be exactly the same. But here the point is what? Avibhaktam cha bhuteshu vibhaktam iva cha sthitam. Although he is not differentiated, he appears differentiated. So later on in the same chapter, when in the Jnana Chakshu, in verse 31, Krishna will talk about, how or the one who sees that there is one soul, one Supreme Lord who is expanded into various bodies. That vision is the vision of knowledge. So basically, the analogy is conveying a particular point.
So, let's move forward.
Now, at last, the 18th verse of Krishna will tell who will do that. Jyotisham api tat jyotis tamasah param uchyate
Jnanam Jayam Jnana Gamyam Vidisarvasya Vachitam. So who is chewing everyone's heart? That is the Paramatma. It is not the soul. It is not the it is the super soul. So here it becomes very clear. This is Vishtitam. Vishtitam. Now this Jyotisha, because Jyotisha is good enough. We know that. The source of light in all these objects. Prabhashi Surya Krishna has said earlier in some chapter. But what about this Jnanam Yayam Jnanagamyam? So knowledge knowable to be approached by knowledge. How does Prabhupada translate? He is knowledge, he is the object of knowledge, and he is the goal of knowledge. So it seems to be a little confusing. What is the difference between object of knowledge and goal of knowledge? So there are some Prabhupada acharyas have given interesting insights here, for this was especially. He is awareness, he is the object of knowledge, he is obtained only with the process of knowledge previously mentioned. So what does this mean? Jnanam Jnayam Jnanagamyam. You remember Rasaraj always quoted the sentence. All knowledge comes from Krishna. Knowledge comes from Krishna, but knowledge doesn't begin from Krishna. Know this? Knowledge comes from Krishna. This Prabhupada says is path of perfection. On the way to Krishna. Knowledge comes from Krishna, but knowledge doesn't begin from Krishna. What does that mean? That ultimately the Paramatma is only giving knowledge. But when we start our knowledge, we don't think about Krishna. What is this world around me? What is it made up of? So knowledge comes from Krishna, but knowledge doesn't begin from Krishna. So, Jnanam Jnayam Jnanagamyam. So, Jnaya means, what is it that should be knowable? First of all, people start by wanting to know, okay, what is this world around me? What is Kshetra? What is Kshetra? Who is Purusha? They start inquiring about the world around them. So, the world is the object of knowledge for people. That's how the knowledge quest starts. But ultimately the world is not the goal of knowledge. Through the world we have to go beyond the world, the source of the world. That is supreme law. So that is the object of knowledge. Whom do you want to know ultimately? Vedaishya sarvai ameva vedyo. So, now this is the difference between Jnaya and Jnanagamya. Resolve that contradiction which I had mentioned earlier. Now, Krishna is told in the 11th chapter, 53rd verse, Naham Vedaya. And 15th chapter, 15th verse, he will say, Veda Ishya Sarvai Aham Eva Veda. So, he says, I cannot be known by the Vedas, and all the Vedas are meant to know me. What does that mean? But now, Krishna says in the 2nd chapter, 45th verse, Trigunya Vishaya Veda is Trigunya Vavacha. That means, the Vedas try to talk about this world, how to enjoy in this world. In that world, in a sense, the Vedas tell us about Jnana. This world is what we want to know. But ultimately, by knowing this world, by knowing how this world works, by understanding that somebody is making this world work, our attention rises to that person. And then he becomes the object of our knowledge. So, some scientists, you know, they go mad studying the studying physics. They spend hours and hours trying to speculate. What is what? Is it like this theory, that theory, this equation, that equation? So, what are they fascinated with? They don't understand it, but they are fascinated with Krishna. They are fascinated with Krishna. Because Krishna has manifested himself as, for them at the Jnanamaya level, where they are trying to go beyond the appearances to the principles. Okay, this fruit is falling, but why is the fruit falling? What is the principle behind it? That is the mental construct, that is the abstraction. So Krishna at that level, at the level of Jnana, also fascinates me. But their fascination stops there. Now Newton, many times when he would make his discoveries, he would say, oh God, I think thy thoughts after thee. I think thy thoughts after thee. That means, the way you thought in making this world work, by your grace, I'm able to think like that. I suppose most of you know this. Newton was throughout his life a Brahmachari. At the end of his life, he made so many inventions, so many significant discoveries. At the end of his life, when he was asked, what do you consider the most significant achievement of your life? He said, being celibate. So you consider that to be the most significant achievement of his life. So, in fact, Newton did a lot of research in the area of God's actions in this world also. And for him, his understanding of the working of nature
was like a spiritual revelation of God's glory. So how glorious is God? He is working in so many wonderful ways. Because you know, if we think that nature is working chaotically, then there is no understanding of God's glory there. But if we understand that nature is working wonderfully, then we understand God's glory through that. So, unfortunately, his successors became overconfident. And they felt that, yes, you understood how nature works, and nature works, if you understand how it works, we will make it work according to our will. There is no need for somebody else to be working on nature. And they removed God from the picture. So, but anyway, here he is the goal, he is the subject of knowledge, and he is also the goal of knowledge. So, now we will come to the last verse of this section, and last verse of our class today. Yeah? No, all the, see this 13 to 19 section is same. Gaya is the object of knowledge. Gaya includes two, soul and the super soul. So 13 describes the soul and 14 to 18 will describe the super soul. So now Krishna will summarize this knowledge by telling who can understand
it. Iti kshetram tatha jnanam gayam choktam samasatah मद्भक्त एतद्विज्ञाया मद्भावायोपपद्यते.
So systematic, interesting. Kshetra, Jnan and Jaya. That's what he is describing now. Kshetra described in the first section, then Jnan and Jaya is described. I have described it. Madhbhakta. If you understand, and my devotee understands what will happen, Madbhava Yopapadyate, you will attain my nature. Chakravarti Pasa said that if this is a Jnani who has bhakti, then you will attain Brahman. If it is a bhakta who has bhakti, you will attain the spiritual world. You will go back. Madbhava Yopapadyate. So both spiritual world and Brahman are Madbhava, they are the spiritual nature. But bhakti is all important. Without bhakti, one cannot understand anything. Etat Vigyaya. So there was a contradiction. The Jnaya was said to be Avijnaya. And how is that? How will that Avijnaya become Jnaya? Mad Bhakta Etat Vijnaya. By Bhakti it will become Vijnaya. You will know it. So even in this middle of the Upanishadic hardcore Jnana section, Krishna is talking about Bhakti. So tomorrow we will discuss about Prakriti and Purusha. And then we will complete the Jnana section. And we will do the 14th chapter also tomorrow. So, I'll summarize what we discussed today. It depends. It can be both. Madhbhakta, if it's a devotee studying Jnana, he goes to the spiritual world. If it's a Jnani with bhakti, he will attain Brahma. So, it can be both. Yeah. This chapter started with Arjuna's questions, and Krishna answers, starts from the basics, answers Kshetra and Kshetrajna. Then he answers the Jnana, which are basically qualities that are developed so that one can, so that Jnana awakens in the heart. And he describes all the Jnana, the soul and the super soul. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Om Bhakti Jai.